Tonight we're going to go back to David's big defeat of that huge, giant soldier, Goliath. And last time we talked of how David defeated him with the Lord's help and in the Lord's strength. And here we have David standing in front of King Saul with Goliath's head. And no one else in the whole country, including the King Saul, was prepared to go out against Goliath. So David was a unique person and had unique boldness in the Lord his God. We're going to look at the relationship between Saul and David, David and Saul. We're going to think about how they are different people and how their lives took on a very different course and had a very different ending. Saul had been chosen by God to be the king of Israel, first king of Israel, but he had been disobedient and all he wanted was his own way, and he bowed very easily to the pressure of others, wanted to please others, and so he was rejected by God. David was going to be the new king. So I'm sure you can understand how there was a number of things are going to come into this relationship which are going to cause quite a lot of problems. So David has been bold and has overcome Goliath, and Saul wasn't brave enough to do that. And David's victory over Goliath and the Philistines was celebrated by the women in the cities. They sang praises to David, to Saul as well, but mostly to David. They said that Saul had slayed his thousands and David had slayed his tens of thousands. And very, very quickly, jealousies started to spring up in Saul's heart. He knew that he was nothing like David, but he was still very jealous because David was used by God, was lifted up by God, and was victorious in God's strength, whereas he didn't even have the courage to do it. And David works for Saul. He plays the harp for Saul, for Saul's amusement and to calm Saul, who has sometimes got some very bad moods. Saul tries to kill David twice because he is so jealous of him. Perhaps Saul thought of the old idea that you should keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And he really did regard David as an enemy. And he gave him a high rank in the army because David was able to do these great deeds. But underneath it all was this jealousy which was festering. So Saul wondered how he could get David even closer. Saul had two daughters, Meribah, and he thought, well, she can marry David. David made the excuse that he wasn't worthy to be the king's son-in-law. He didn't see that he should marry Merab. So he said that he wasn't worthy. And when it came to the wedding, she actually ended up marrying somebody else. But Saul had another daughter, Michal. And Saul thought, well, maybe she'll marry off to David. He found out that Michal actually was in love with David. So he thought, well, I can use this situation. I can manipulate something here. And I can get David married off to my daughter. And that will be a benefit to me because I can keep a close eye on him. And so Michal does marry David and she's in love with David. But of course, David doesn't really want to get married to Michal at all. He doesn't know that it's the right thing to do. And he says to King Saul, well, I'm not really worthy to be your son-in-law. I'm still not worthy to be your son-in-law. So Saul says, well, I tell you what you can do. I want you to go down to the Philistines, our enemies, and I want you to collect for me 100 foreskins, 100 skins of penises. That's going to be a bit difficult if somebody is alive, as you can imagine. So what David actually had to do was he had to kill the Philistines and get these foreskins. Saul asked for 100. David brought him 200. So again, we see that God is allowing David and strengthening David to do more than even he thinks he can. He trusts in the Lord his God, and God makes him more than victorious. So the foreskins are brought back to Saul, and so he ends up marrying Michal. Saul is enraged with jealousy, hatred. He wants rid of David, so he decides he's just going to go to David's house and kill him. No more intrigue, no more manipulation, let's just kill him. And Michal, she hears about it and she loves David. So she helps David to escape. She lets him down out of a high window in a basket so that he gets away with his men. And what she does, in David's bed, she puts an idol, a sort of human body-sized idol. She puts it in the bed to look like a person and puts goat's hair on the top, so it's his hair. So when the soldiers come in, they start sort of sticking their swords or whatever into this idol in the bed, and they find out that it's not David at all. And Saul isn't terribly happy with his daughter either. So David gets away. He has to flee up into the mountains and over into the deserts, into very difficult situations where there's no food, no bed, nowhere to wash yourself. David is now on the run, and he goes into the desert Ziph, and they live in a place called Adullam. It's a big cave, which means refuge, and he lives there with 400 men and women, 400 people with him, not very many. And David's family come out to live there as well because they realise that they're in danger as well. So here we have David with a small band of people who are frightened and who need protection. And even in that small band, there, it turns out to be that some of David's cousins and brothers end up to be mighty warriors as well. So God is protecting David and helping him. On one occasion, David is going up a hill in the desert, and he doesn't know, but King Saul is going up the other side of the hill, and King Saul has got 3,000 crack troops, and he is determined to hunt David down. And just before they meet, because once they get to the top they're going to meet, a servant comes and says to Saul, "Come quickly, the Philistines are attacking." And Saul has to leave off his hunting David. He has to go back and deal with the Philistines. So even in that way too, God is protecting David by overruling in situations. David ends up in caves and in another desert called En-Gedi. And one day they're hiding in the back of this cave. I think maybe they're living there for some shelter. And Saul and some of his men come into that cave. Saul is coming in to have a bit of a pee. And David and his men are hiding in the back, and Saul doesn't see them. And David manages to cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Saul leaves with his men and they go on up the hill. And David is like conscience stricken that he has actually cut off the corner of Saul's robe. He knows he is not to lift his hand against the Lord's anointed. And even though Saul is a rejected king and an evil man now, he is still the Lord's anointed. And David will not do anything that would be disobedient to the Lord. And he is really affected by this. So he comes out and he actually prostrates himself before Saul, right down on the floor, face down, right down on the floor. And he is sorry that he even cut the corner of his robe. But Saul can see that David could have killed him in that cave. He was very in a very vulnerable state. And David's men and the people in his group encouraged him to kill Saul. "Now's your chance, David. He's been hunting you down, and now God has delivered him into your hands. Just kill him." But David knew that was not God's way, and that he shouldn't lift his hand against someone who was the Lord's anointed. And when Saul sees that, Saul starts to cry really loudly. He seems to be so sorry. And it's difficult to know whether that weeping was real or not. Because later on in the story, Saul doesn't really appear to be sorry at all. But he weeps at this point. And he says to David, "The Lord is going to raise you. Your family is going to be great in the Lord's kingdom." And Saul leaves and goes home. And David goes back to living in the desert of Ziph. Now here we see two men who couldn't be more different. We see someone who is rejected and whose life is becoming increasingly sinful. His inner life, he is full of jealousies and hatreds, spite and malice and murder. And he hates the man that God loves, the man that God has chosen to lead his people and to be his king. And we see Saul going to extraordinary lengths to find David, to kill him and to cut him down and to take out his vengeance on David. For no reason, David hasn't done him any harm, but because David is lifted up with the Lord. David is holy. David is the Lord's king. And so his jealousy just gets the better of him time and time again. Whereas we see David, who, even though Saul is his mortal enemy, he prostrates himself before him and he humbles himself and he is sorry for even a small thing that he has done that he feels is wrong. We see somebody who does not rely on their own wit or their own strength or even circumstances. We see somebody who wants to obey the Lord completely, do what God says, and to live for him wholly. And this is why David is the accepted king, because he loves the Lord and he is willing to humble himself and to do what God says. And these two men had a very different end. I'll not tell you all the details just tonight, but I want you to think about how this applies to you, because this applies to you. You may not be running away in the desert. You may not be a jealous king, but these two sort of represents the two states of how we are. Either we are loved by God or we are hated. Either we love God or we hate him. Either we are determined to play out our sinfulness and to get what we want and to do what we want, or we are willing to humble ourselves before the Lord and do what he wants. And really, our world is full of people like Saul, who want what they want, are determined to get what they want, and I will do it my way. We even have people who call themselves Christians who do that. And there is no humility, and they don't really care about God's ways. Or are we going to be like David, who trusted the Lord so implicitly, trusted the Lord for the lion and the bear, for Goliath, trusted the Lord as he played in Saul's palaces and Saul tried to murder him, trusted the Lord to go out against the Philistines and be victorious, trusted the Lord for wandering in the desert in such misery with such a few number of people with him. But it is not numbers, and it is not what we have that impresses the Lord. It is how we are and how much we love him. And I really pray that you will choose rightly in your life, that you will choose the Lord's way as your way.